All right, well, let's turn to the book of Proverbs tonight, Proverbs chapter 1, and we're making our way through the book of Proverbs, and I'm really looking forward to this, just studying ahead a little bit today into some of the texts ahead. I was up last night. I ended up, my wife said there was some extra coffee from the ladies. Evidently, you ladies don't drink as much coffee as I do, so that was good, because last night I started in on what was left of, I think the entire pot was left, so you really need to pick it up there, because I finished it off as I started studying, and I just got so into this that I looked at the clock, and it was almost 2 o'clock this morning, and I was just all excited about it, probably the coffee, but I think it was Proverbs that was exciting, and it was just very, very interesting. So I'm looking forward to this. I'm still on a high, if you can't tell. It's been a great day. All right, so Proverbs chapter 1, and we're going to look at starting in verse 7, and we'll read tonight through verse 19. All right, so Proverbs chapter 1, and we're studying this quest for wisdom as we go through here, and these are still sort of some introductory statements that Solomon is making. We kind of had an introduction last week, and then now he's going to work into some of the foundational things that he's going to put in place before we get into the actual Proverbs here. So Proverbs chapter 1, beginning here in verse 7, it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head, and chains about thy neck. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave, and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in thy lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. So are the ways of every one that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof." All right, so an interesting passage here tonight. And last week we began sort of the introduction into that, and we kind of understood a little bit about what wisdom is, that it's really a life skill, literally the skill to do life. That's what it is. It's a skill of how to do life, and it's a journey. We talked last week that begins, we kind of had three chairs out here, if you remember, and it begins with simple Simon, okay? Is Simon, did he just leave? Evidently, oh, he's back there. Oh, he's coming through the front door right now? Well, I don't know what my family's doing, but that's good. Okay, yeah, come on in. You can... They looked at me looking at them. I was just asking where Simon was, and I looked, and there he was. Anyway, so we started with simple Simon, and we learned how the simple are those that just have kind of an open slate. It's just like a clean sheet of paper. They haven't made any mistakes. They also haven't really had any good experience either. They're just totally open. And it said that wisdom gives subtlety to the simple. It helps them to kind of understand some things, to give them some warnings of things ahead. We had Colton up here, and we called him our young buck. You got a buck yet? Or a deer yet? No deer yet, just Dennis. He watched Dennis shoot a deer, so that's really close, but it's not the same. Right. So he was our young buck, and our young man, when he receives wisdom, it gives him knowledge and discretion, which we talked about is kind of like a strategy, not just winging it, going into life, just take whatever happens. It's actually having a plan and doing that. And we even had a wise mature man. And the wise, mature man, Brother Tom, was up here and showed us that even when you've had lots of experience in your life and you have amassed a wealth of wisdom, you never graduate. You continue to add learning and to add wisdom. And so what we can learn, if you can learn from Proverbs and develop wisdom, then you'll have the opportunity to do life right. And that's what Solomon is saying here. And after our kind of prologue there last week, that's what we're going to talk about tonight, is how to do life right. And so he begins here in verse 7, doing life right. And here's kind of the instructions or a couple of points along these lines. First of all, doing life with the author. He says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The way that wisdom begins, the starting point, has to begin with God. Having a proper respect for the Creator of the universe and kind of the organizer of all the things that we do, and acknowledging that He sees the big picture, that He has a plan and a purpose in this, that is the beginning. Now, the Christian has a handbook. We have the Bible. We have instructions on how to live life. Now, the Bible doesn't claim to answer every specific situation that we may encounter in the day and age that we live. You're not going to look in the Bible and find specifically the answer to how do I not worry about ISIS? What's ISIS going to do? That's a thing on the news today, but ISIS isn't in the Bible, okay? But there's principles there, okay? Who should I vote for president? You know, their names aren't in here. Who should I marry? She's probably not in there either. You know, there's a lot of questions that we may not know what health insurance plan should I pick, and other questions maybe don't have an answer. Why can't the Cowboys find a decent quarterback? We don't know. We have no idea. And there's a lot of questions we're not sure of. But while the answer and the names aren't really in here, there are principles there. And there are principles, and God has given us the Holy Spirit, that with His Word, with the principles from His Word, and with the Holy Spirit in our lives, we can function with wisdom. We can know what the right choice is as we meet those choices. We may not find it laid out in black and white, but that's what wisdom is being able to take truths and apply it to life and developing a skill to life. And you cannot do that apart from God. Because God is the one that has made the rules. He's the one that designs the circumstances. And so we must begin with the fear of the Lord. But in His mercy, God did not just give us, I mean, if He just gave us the Scriptures, that's wonderful. I mean, that's great. I'm not minimizing that at all. But in His mercy and grace, God has also given us helpers along the way, hasn't He? And that's why He says right here in verse 8, He begins with the very first instructions in our life. So we want to do life with the author, but we can also do life with wise counselors. And He mentions here, my son, hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother. We have people in our life that God gives us to help us along the way, to help us make wise choices, to give us spiritual guidance. Now, there are opportunities where there may be other people in our lives who can give us good counsel, who maybe are not saved, and there is a place for that. If my car is broken down and I go to a mechanic, he may not be saved, but he may know how to work on my car. That's fine. That's no problem. If I'm sick and I go to the doctor, we had a doctor in Mangum for a long time. It was a very good doctor, and their family kind of came from a Buddhist background, and they weren't Christians at all. And I remember years ago, I was talking to a guy who was a pastor there in Mangum, and I was asking him, I was just maybe in junior high or so, and I was asking him about doctors and things, and I mentioned to him our doctor, and he looked at me and he said, we only go to a Christian doctor. And it was just really funny, because these other folks were Vietnamese. I think he had a thing with them or something. And so, but if you go to the doctor and you have an illness and something's wrong, and somebody's over here doing something right now, I can tell, isn't it? It's probably Jack. It is Jack. How did I know that? Okay. Well, Jack's having issues, but he always has issues. That's okay. Point is, if you have an issue, like a medical issue, and the person that's working on you isn't saved, you know, I don't have a problem with that. If they know their stuff, that's fine. But what if a teenager is wanting to start dating? They need some dating advice. Well, now that's a life issue, isn't it? I mean, that can affect your life. That certainly could affect your life, especially if you get married and move on from there. So the advice we would want in that area would definitely want to be from a godly counselor, wouldn't it? And I'm thinking, I still think with a teenage mind sometimes, but also kids in that age group are looking at career options. And there's a lot of people that are willing to give advice of what they could do and what they could do with their life. We better make sure that we're getting the advice from a godly counselor. And even as adults, we get to make major decisions in our life, or we go to make a life change, or we go to do something different in our life or change paths a little bit. We better be getting advice from a godly counselor if it's going to be godly wisdom to help us down the path of life. That's what's important. And Solomon mentions a couple of people here. The very first two counselors that we have in our life are our father and our mother. Godly parents are critical. And that's what he says here. The father gives instruction. We have the law of your mother. And here, even in this small picture, we see just a little bit of how the home is supposed to operate, where you have a father that's listed first here that gives instruction, that kind of blazes a trail for his family to follow down the path of life. And as he clears the way and sets the direction for his family, you have the mother right behind, and she has the law, which is another word very similar to instruction. It actually refers to the Torah, or the law of God. And as they go in a direction, dad's going this direction, mom's right in line there going the exact same direction, the parents are on the same page. That would be important, wouldn't it, to have the parents on the same page so that they can lead, and then the children follow right along. So what is the children's responsibility, the responsibility of that child? Very simply, in verse 8, it says we are first of all to hear the instruction of our father. We're supposed to listen. We're supposed to listen for wisdom. Not just for the words that are said, but for the principles behind the words. If a parent is wanting a child to clean their room, well, they can clean their room, but what's the principle? To keep things clean. Because one day that child will not only have a room, they'll have a car, they'll have an office, they'll have a home of their own, they'll have a workshop, they'll have whatever it is. And if they learn not just to clean this room, but to keep things clean, then they've learned the wisdom from their parents, right? And I'm just using that as an example. I'm not trying to get Colton into trouble or anything, but that's just what came to mind as I said that, all right? So they're supposed to listen to the instruction, not just for the instruction, but for the wisdom behind the instruction. But then in regards to the mother here, it says, forsake not the law of thy mother. So listen for instruction and then hang on to it. Don't get rid of it. No matter how old you get, you don't get rid of that. You hang on to it. And that's good advice, not just for children and parents, but for anyone that's getting wisdom from a wise counselor, isn't it? I mean, we need to be listening for the wisdom behind the instruction. We need to hang on to that wisdom and use it. So what's in it for the person who gets counsel? Well, in verse 9, we see that doing life right has its rewards. They shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. So an ornament of grace refers to kind of that wreath, crown you may have seen like in the old days of the first Olympics. The winners, you know, you go through all this work and you get like a Christmas wreath that you wear on your head. You know, like, wow, that's exciting, you know. But back then, it was what it symbolized more than what it was. I mean, it would fade and go away. But what it symbolized is that you were victorious. You had accomplished something and you were the best. And it was a very high honor, wasn't it? And that was a huge thing. And I can imagine that Olympian who's standing there, and in our day we get the gold medals, they get the gold medals, and as they stand there on that platform and their national anthem is played and they're given that gold medal, they think back to all the training that they had gone through and all of the years. Sometimes a lifetime of training goes into some of these sports, to some of these things that they accomplish, and just one thing after another, and just giving their life, especially the prime of their life, to achieve this. And when they've done it, there's going to be long days in the gym, long training sessions and coaching, and a lot of times things that aren't very nice, where their coach is yelling at them and doing things, but it's worth it when they're standing there and they're getting their reward. Or you look at the football team, when they win their trophy, when they are champions in their district or whatever it might be, and as they're sitting there and you see their picture in the paper and they're all happy and excited and everything, that only came because earlier at the beginning of the season they were doing two-a-days and they were running and they were sweating and they were doing all this stuff and there were late nights going to games and coming back and all the work that they put in. But in the end, it's worth it because of that. What Solomon is saying here is a young man or a young lady who applies themselves to wisdom, who listens to instruction, finds the wisdom in the instruction, hangs on to it, then they will achieve victory over the issues of life. As they go through life, they will do it skillfully, and they will accomplish something with their life that they wouldn't have been able to do if they didn't use wisdom. And then he says, not only an ornament of grace, but also chains about thy neck. And I can hear kids saying, oh, that's about right. Yeah, my parents, it's like a chain, a ball and chain around my neck. Well, it's not the ball and chain that they're talking about. They're talking about like a gold necklace that when they're, remember whenever Joseph was brought out of, the Joseph in the Old Testament, not the Mary Joseph, but the one in the Old Testament, he was brought up out of the dungeon and he interpreted Pharaoh's dream and he was made second in command. And the scripture says in Genesis that Pharaoh put a gold chain around his neck. And it was a symbol. It associated him with Pharaoh. It associated him with power, with authority. And he was very different. I mean, he was the same guy, but he was the very opposite of what he used to be, wasn't he? He was no longer a prisoner in the dungeon. He was now, really the second in command of the world at the time. And that simple gesture, that chain around his neck, gave him authority and influence and associated him with great power. And that's what he's saying here. Wisdom not only gives victory, but it also has associations with it that a person who has wisdom, who knows how to do life right, will have great associations in their life. There's a lot of good things here with wisdom. And so that's what these parents are trying to help this son understand, that wisdom, a person who fears God, who receives instruction, and who keeps it, is going to be starting down a path that ends in success. Now, it may not be success as the world calls it. It may not be financial success and, you know, health, wealth, and happiness and all that. Although, a person who makes right choices oftentimes will find those things. But the true success is God's priorities, successful here in God's eyes. So that's how to do life right. But what Solomon emphasizes here in this larger section, beginning in verse 10, is an alternative path. So if we have one path that's doing life right, then this would be doing life wrong, right? You're supposed to guess there, but that's okay. You know, I don't know what he's going to say. That's probably true. Okay. So doing life wrong. We have the fools listed here. And we're going to study the fools as we go through Proverbs. They come up a lot through here. But here he gives us a very specific scenario that takes place. And he begins he introduces this kind of scenario where sinners entice him. And here's what it's like to do life with sinners. He describes these people that really we couldn't describe them as anything else than a gang, a group of thugs, the mob, whatever you want to call it. It's a group of people, and they come to entice him in verse 9, to entice him or to seduce him. That word entice there comes from the same root as the simple one. It's just kind of empty-headed, blank slate thing. And you can see that in their description of their plan in verse 11. He says, come, let's lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Like, why are we doing this? I don't know. It just seems like the thing to do. It seems like it'll be fun. And that kind of describes how that's how their journey begins, and that's where they go. They just go down a line. It's just senseless violence is what they're into. They're just going out, let's just go lie wait for blood, let's go attack people, and let's join together and be a menace. And you see, we're not going to go through word for word through here, but you see swallow them up as the grave. They talk about killing people and taking the authority of the grave onto themselves, taking the life of people and the power that gives them, being able to wield the power of the grave, so to speak, and having spoil and riches in verse 13, having identity together in verse 14, cast in thy lot among us, let us all have one purse, let's just have one big family together, and here we will have identity together, and we will be able to do whatever we want together, and it's going to be great. And as they begin down the path, it just goes out of control. And we go from just doing life with sinners to doing life out of control in verse 15, where he begins and says, my son, walk not thou in the way with them, refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil. You can see the accelerating of this. It begins just kind of wandering down a path to where eventually they're just running from one evil to another. Nothing stands in their way. It doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. They're just going to go do whatever comes into their mind. If the person has money, they're going to take it. And eventually that greed just takes over and they begin just going, shedding blood, making haste to shed blood, and just going on from there. And it leads to some kind of, it began as just a senseless act of violence, but eventually it becomes their very identity. It changes them into a person who just wants to shed blood, who wants to get things, who wants to gain wealth and do all of these things, you know, just the violence, the theft, this gang type of lifestyle, and they do life right into a death trap. It says here, in verse 18, it says, they lay wait for their own blood, and they lurk privily for their own lives. Look at verse 17. Verse 17 says, surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. Now, I don't know about you, but here we are. We're talking about gangs and violence, and then there's this bird. It doesn't really make sense. Now, you may have looked at that and said, it probably makes sense, but I don't get it. Well, that's what I thought too. So we're all on the same page because it doesn't really follow. We're reading about gangs, we're reading about shedding blood, and then it just kind of gives us this science lesson about a bird. So welcome to the first proverb of the book of Proverbs, because that's what Proverbs is, isn't it? Very simple. Is it hard to understand? I mean, surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. It's a very simple phrase. It's very simple. I mean, we could apply it to deer hunters and say, you know, you don't set up the blind in front of the deer, right? I mean, you could say that. Okay, what does that have to do with gangs and violence? It's out of place, but this is how the Proverbs work. Remember at the very beginning, he said that we were going to understand in verse 6 the words of the wise and their dark sayings. This is one of those. Okay, so what is he talking about in verse 17? He's talking about a trap, right? A trap. If you're going to hunt birds, which I've never hunted birds, but if you're going to hunt, and I've definitely never hunted a bird with a net, but if you were to hunt a bird with a net, okay, you're going to lay it out, I guess is what they do, and they have the birds come, and then when the birds get in the net, they pull something, and it just kind of sucks them up or whatever. I guess I thought maybe it'd fall on them, but whatever. That's how they do it, okay? Bird hunting people. So what is he saying? Well, he's saying you can't just lay out the net right in front of the birds and expect to catch them. And that's what I thought at first. But, I mean, let's think about it. You lay a net out, you put some bird food down, and the trapper walks away. What happens? Well, of course the birds are going to come there. The birds aren't going to come up and say, oh, there's a net there, I better not eat it. No, the birds, after the hunter's gone and the threat's out of the way, the birds just see food. They don't see bait. They see food because that's what they're looking for. And there's a net there, but who cares? They're birds. And so they eat it, and that's what happens. And they don't know. As they're eating those, then the hunter's behind a tree or whatever, pulls the thing, and it catches them up. They don't know the difference in that. The birds are trapped because they don't realize that it's a trap. And that's why that happens. The fool, who we read about, who originally, back in verse 11, was attracted to violence for no reason. Hey, let's just get together and let's just go lurk privily for the innocent without cause. He was just out for that. Eventually, he's working his way, and in verse 16, he's there to shed blood. And it's interesting, this little proverb about the bird, verse 17, is kind of nested right in between verse 16 and 18, where it says that they're making haste to shed blood. Then you have verse 17 and then verse 18. They actually lay wait for their own blood is what they're doing. The blood he ends up going for is his own. He's going out to get trapped and then out to trap others, and then he's the one that ends up getting trapped. It's kind of like the young person who says, you know, I'm here to celebrate life. I'm young. You only live once. And that's, you know, YOLO is what they used to say a while. Do they still say that? Do kids still say that now? Okay, well, there you go. I'm hip. What do you know? So it's like, YOLO, you only live once. And they usually say that right before they do something just as stupid as can be. But oftentimes, and it's tragic because oftentimes it happens and they end up forfeiting the very life that they're rejoicing that they have. You know, you only live once, and then they give it up. And it's very, very sad. And so that's what he's saying is there's a net there, and if you're not looking for it, you don't even know it's there, it's going to take you. Now, that's the section here. That's our passage. And if I were to honestly ask tonight and say, how many of you have been dealing with temptation to join the mob or to join a gang, I don't think many of us in here have dealt with that in our life. Probably most of us, our carousing days are behind us, and we are moving forward past that, I hope. I don't know if Colton's interested in joining the mob or not. I think Simon may be trying to get one together. But other than those two guys, the rest of us, I think, they're probably pretty good. And I felt the same way as I read through this until we get to verse 19, because verse 19 says, "So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain." So really, this whole thing isn't really about gangs and violence as much as it is about greed and the desire for stuff, which is the American way, isn't it? And all of a sudden, we're kind of caught, aren't we? It's a trap within a parable about traps. In the early 90s, there's a lady named Juliet Skor. She wrote a book called The Overworked American. And she outlined a trend that had been taking place for 50 years up to that point, how most Americans, and it's still true, most Americans will choose to, they will choose higher pay over time off. They could have time off, or if they could maybe get in some extra hours, most Americans will choose, the trend is that they will choose the overtime. They'll choose the higher pay, even if it means less vacation time or less days off or whatever that may be. They'd rather have the bigger paycheck. And the reason, she concluded here, is because we have developed a higher and higher level of living, a standard of living. That's what we've developed over time. And so in order to enjoy that higher and higher standard of living, we need to pay for it somehow. So it requires a lot of work. A few years later, she wrote a sequel to that called The Overspent American. And her continued research showed that Americans are still keeping up with the Joneses. But the Joneses are not the next door neighbors, because we don't really even know our next door neighbors anymore. The group of people that we are comparing ourselves to is this model of Americans that we see in the workplace, or we see as we're out to play, or whatever it might be. We are exposed to people who have expensive tastes. She said even kids in preschool are exposed to these higher, more expensive tastes, and they start seeing, you know, the nice shoes and the nice clothes and the nice toys and the nice things. And as they continue to grow up from preschool forward, where they're constantly being shown through the media and through friends and everything, these higher and higher levels of living, to where that becomes what's accepted as being normal. In the book, she surveyed a large company, 85,000 employees, and she factored in here that each hour that was spent watching television, it reduced the average annual savings by about $208 a year. So for every hour watching television, people stopped saving their money because they needed to be spending it more. And she said it wasn't just commercials. It's not just the commercials. It's the lives of the people on the shows. It's the cars that the people are driving. It's the clothes that we see people wearing. It's the phones we see people talking on. It's all the things that we see. And if you look for these things, and as I've been thinking about this the last week or so, as you look for these things, you find it. You don't ever watch a show where someone's driving a car like you and I might drive, or where they're dressed like you and I might be dressed. It's always a notch above, and it's just accepted as normal. And that has become our way of life, and it's become very, very normal. And it's not just television, it's higher education. She looked into that. And as people get more and more education, they feel like they need to have a more successful-looking lifestyle, and it just goes on and on from there. It's interesting because she also found that as people were forced to downsize, maybe they were laid off, maybe they lost a job, and they were forced to kind of downsize their life a little bit, she found that over half the people that had to downsize found out that they were actually a lot happier that way. They actually were a lot happier, not trying to compete with all of these things when they had to cut back. They actually found out it was kind of a sigh of relief, and they chose to just kind of stay there. So what's the point? The point is we need to be very careful what we're listening to. We need to be very careful what we're allowing ourselves to hear, who we're allowing to influence us, because our culture is kind of pandering to this deep root of greed and covetousness that we have inside. I mean, we just got through Black Friday. And, you know, here's all the things that you need, and it's all super cheap. So just go out there and just buy something, you know. And if you're like, well, what am I going to buy this year? It's like, I don't need anything, but what am I going to buy this year? And it happens to all of us. We all do this, and it has become something that we just kind of get into, that we just start doing. There are many in here tonight who could just reflect back to the good old days, right, where life was harder, things were simpler, and people were happier, weren't they? There wasn't, and here I am reminiscing, like, you know, I'm only 12, but, you know, still. But it's true, isn't it, that when things were simpler and more basic, it made a lot more sense. And we weren't blinded by that. And what happened? Well, we allowed ourselves to listen to those just as a simple person and to see, hey, let's go down here. And next thing you know, we're going down a path. And as we go down that path, it begins that path of greed. It's like, well, I would like to have that. I do deserve that. Maybe I'll upgrade this. And as we do that, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having things, but we need to be careful why we're doing it. And we need to be careful about those because what he's saying here is it is a trap. The path of greed, he says, so are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain. And if we're trying to gain because at its very root, if it's because of greed, then it's going to lead down a path that leads to more and more sin. And it's going to lead further away from that. It's going to start going down a path where we begin distancing ourselves from godly influences, from our family, and from people that could give us better instruction. And as we begin to compromise and begin to distance ourselves further and further, we find that those paths go in opposite direction, and it can be very, very difficult. And what he says here is that greed is a trap that will actually drain the very life out of our life. And in the end, we don't have anything to show for it anymore, except for a pile of stuff, which we can't do anything with anyway. So what's the solution? Don't have any stuff. No, that's not the solution. The solution is just to be aware of the traps. If the bird knows the trap's there, and we could teach the bird about this, which we can't, but if we could, say, hey, when you see a net there, just go find food somewhere else. It's not food, it's bait, you know. And if we're looking for that, and how in the world are we going to know? By listening to instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And if we fear the Lord above everything else, then we'll see the traps, and you'll know what's there. And you'll even see it in your own spirit when you say, why am I wanting this? Or why am I doing that? Or whatever. And we'll begin to be able to think that way. It's the beginning of knowledge. Don't abandon the good old-fashioned truth. Hear it and keep it, is what he said. Hear the instruction of your father and forsake not the law of thy mother. The end of wisdom, the end of the path of wisdom, it may not have the most stuff, but it will have victory and it will have success in God's eyes. So it's a very simple question tonight. What are you listening to? And let's check that as we do that. We have two options. Well, what will it be? A crown and a necklace, or a purse and a net? Those are our options as we face our life ahead. All right, let's stand. We'll dismiss tonight in a word of prayer, and we'll not have a time of invitation, but as we stand with our heads bowed and eyes closed, I'll give you just a moment here tonight to consider these things that we've talked about. And what path are you on, and who are you listening to? It may be that we've been heading down the wrong one. I don't know. As I read through this, it did bring some things to my mind. We just need to be careful about who we're listening to and what direction we're going. And we need to listen, first of all, to the Lord, to the godly counsel he's placed in our life, and to not let that go for anything. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, I thank you so much for your word that you've given us tonight. God, I thank you that we have your word that has just a wealth of knowledge and instruction. And Lord, in this great book, Lord, that you have given us, you show us what's right and what is wrong, so we can have an anchor point to be able to see the world as it really is, instead of being confused by the games that those in the world often play. And Lord, there are times where we may be tempted by whatever sin easily besets us, Lord. We may be tempted to go astray and to start following our heart in places that maybe we shouldn't. And Lord, I pray that you would help us to be aware of the traps that the world has for us, that our own flesh may even lay for us, that even Satan and his minions may place in our way. Lord, I pray that you would help us to see that. and to be able to step around them and to know when to just leave certain things alone. I pray that you would help us to make those right choices. And God, I thank you for the godly counselors, Lord, that you've given me in my life, and that I'm sure each one of us in here can point to, some even in this room, that have been wise counselors. And I thank you for that, Lord. I pray that you would help all of us on the different stages of life that we're in to do our part, to go down the path of life in the right way, to use wisdom to navigate life in a skillful way. And Lord, I just ask that you would help us to make wise choices so that in the end we can be victorious. We can have success and be able to use that wisdom to help others on their path as well. And ultimately, Lord, to bring glory to you. Lord, be with us as we go from here tonight. And we ask your blessing on that in Jesus' name.